اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد. وأصحابهم وأتباعهم وأوليائهم. يا سلم لمن سالمكم وحرب لمن حاربكم إلى يوم القيامة. ولعن الله آل زياد وآل مروان، ولعن الله بني أمية قاطبة، ولعن الله ابن مرجان، ولعن الله عمر بن سعد، ولعن الله شمر، ولعن الله أمة أسرجت وألجمت وتنقبت لقتالك بأبي أنت وأمي، لقد عظم مصابي بك. فأسأل الله الذي أكرم مقامك وأكرمني بك أن يرزقني طلب ثارك مع إمام منصور من أهل بيت محمد صلى الله عليه وآله. اللهم اجعلني عندك وجيها بالحسين عليه السلام في الدنيا والآخرة. يا أبا عبد الله، إني أتقرب إلى الله وإلى رسوله وإلى أمير المؤمنين وإلى فاطمة وإلى الحسن وإليك بموالاتك وبالبراءة ممن أسس أساس ذلك وبنى عليه بنيانه وجرى في ظلمه وجوره عليكم وعلى أشياعكم، برئت إلى الله وإليكم منهم وأتقرب إلى الله ثم إليكم بموالاتكم وموالاة وليكم وبالبراءة من أعدائكم والناصبين لكم الحرب وبالبراءة من أشياعهم وأتباعهم. إني سلم لمن سالمكم وحرب لمن حاربكم وولي لمن والاكم وعدو لمن عاداكم. فأسأل الله الذي أكرمني بمعرفتكم ومعرفة أوليائكم ورزقني البراءة من أعدائكم أن يجعلني معكم في الدنيا والآخرة، وأن يثبت لي عندكم قدم صدق في الدنيا والآخرة. وأسأله أن يبلغني المقام المحمود لكم عند الله، وأن يرزقني طلب ثاركم مع إمام هدى ظاهر ناطق بالحق منكم. وأسأل الله بحقكم وبالشأن الذي لكم عنده أن يعطيني بمصابي بكم أفضل ما يعطي مصابا بمصيبته، مصيبة ما أعظمها وأعظم رزيتها في الإسلام وفي جميع السماوات والأرض. اللهم اجعلني في مقامي هذا ممن تناله منك صلوات ورحمة ومغفرة. اللهم اجعل محياي محيا محمد وآل محمد، ومماتي ممات محمد وآل محمد. اللهم إن يوم عاشوراء يوم تبركت به بنو أمية وابن آكلة الأكباد، اللعين ابن اللعين على لسانك ولسان نبيك صلى الله عليه وآله. في كل موطن وموقف وقف فيه نبيك صلى الله عليه وآله. اللهم لعن أبا سفيان ومعاوية ويزيد ابن معاوية عليهم منك اللعنة أبد الآبدين. ويوم عاشوراء يوم فرحت به آل زياد وآل مروان بقتلهم الحسين صلوات الله عليه. اللهم فضاعف عليهم اللعن منك والعذاب الأليم. اللهم إني أتقرب إليك في هذا اليوم وفي موقفي هذا وأيام حياتي بالبراءة منهم واللعنة عليهم وبالموالاة لنبيك وآل نبيك عليه وعليهم السلام. اللهم لعن أول ظالم ظلم حق محمد وآل محمد وآخر تابع له على ذلك. اللهم لعن العصابة التي جاهدت الحسين وشايعت وبايعت وتابعت على قتله. اللهم لعنهم جميعا. السلام عليك يا أبا عبد الله وعلى الأرواح التي حلت بفنائك. عليك مني سلام الله أبدا ما بقيت وبقي الليل والنهار، ولا جعله الله آخر العهد مني لزيارتكم. السلام على الحسين وعلى علي بن الحسين وعلى أولاد الحسين وعلى أصحاب الحسين. اللهم خص أنت أول ظالم باللعن مني، وابدأ به أولا ثم لعن الثانية والثالثة والرابعة. اللهم لعن يزيد خامسا، ولعن عبيد الله بن زياد وابن مرجانة وعمر بن سعد وشمرة وآل أبي سفيان وآل زياد وآل مروان إلى يوم القيامة. اللهم لك الحمد حمد الشاكرين لك على مصابهم. الحمد لله على عظيم رزيتي. اللهم ارزقني شفاعة الحسين يوم الورود، وثبت لي قدم صدق عندك مع الحسين وأصحاب الحسين الذين بذلوا مهجهم دون الحسين عليه السلام.
صلوا على محمد وآل محمد. اللهم صل على محمد وآل. اے بابا جانم، اے بابا جانم، اے بابا جانم، اے بابا جانم، ننے اصغر کو اماں نے کتنے پیار سے پالا تھا، ننے اصغر کو اماں نے کتنے پیار سے پالا تھا، اس کے دم سے گھر میں ہمارے خوشیاں اور اجالا تھا۔ تیر گلے میں لگتے ہی بابا نے اسے سنبھالا تھا، بابا نے اسے سنبھالا تھا۔ اصغر ویرانے میں گھبرایا تو کون سنبھالے گا، اے بابا جانم، اے بابا جانم، اے بابا جانم، اے بابا جانم۔ He says, O child, forgive me, I did not wish for your dim light to see me here broken and torn, dying alone under the sky. Here lies my body and my head, and over there my infant lies. Eh Baba Janam, eh Baba Janam, eh Baba Janam, eh Baba Janam. شام کے جب بازار سے گزرے ہم مظلوم جھکائے سر، شام کے جب بازار سے گزرے ہم مظلوم جھکائے سر، آپ کا سر ظالم تھے اٹھائے بابا نو کے نیزہ پر، بالوں سے تھی منہ کو چھپائے فاطمہ زہرا کی دختر۔ لوگ کھڑے یوں دیکھ رہے تھے جیسے کوئی تماشا تھا، اے بابا جانم، اے بابا جانم، اے بابا جانم، اے بابا جانم۔ Father, I wish you hadn't come, how can my eyes see you like this? In fact, I wish you never left to go back to all. If I wish, I miss sleeping right by your side, every morning your cheek I kiss. I once thought I was in heaven, now dark sorrow have replaced this. Eh Baba Janam, eh Baba Janam, eh Baba Janam, eh Baba Janam. Bhaiya Abid aur Phuphi, amma to Madine jayenge، بھیا عابد اور پھوپھی اماں تو مدینے جائیں گے، گریا کر کے اہل وطن کو صبر و داد سنائیں گے، پرسا دیں گے پرسا لیں گے سب کو گلے لگائیں گے، سب کو گلے لگائیں گے، یہ بھی کہیں گے ہم کو، یہ بھی کہیں گے قید ستم میں مجھ کو وطن یاد آتا تھا۔ اے بابا جانم، اے بابا جانم۔ او فادر وائی ڈیڈ یو لیو می، ڈو آئی ریمائنڈ یو آف زہرا، so much that when you gaze at me your mind remembers the fire. Oh father, why did you leave me, do I remind you of Zahra, so much that when you gaze at me your mind remembers the fire. I know sorrow it grips your heart every time that you think of her. So when you left me here alone, I felt left me Fatima, eh Baba Janam, eh Baba Janam, eh Baba Janam, eh Baba Janam. Sallu ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad. Dear brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum. Thank you so much for following all state guidelines and for making our program safe and accessible for our community. From now on, as we announced last week, we'll be holding all our weekly sessions in this drive-through format following social distancing guidelines. For those who would like to attend from home, we'll be live streaming all our programs on YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram live. Please check your weekly email and our social media channels for more details and other sessions. If you'd like to be notified in advance of our latest programming, please join our email list by giving your email address to our volunteers and like and follow Al-Walai on social media platforms. If you would like to listen to the speech in your car, please tune in your radio to 90.5 FM to listen in. As a reminder, all our guests are required to abide by the following guidelines for our drive-in sessions. Please observe 6 feet physical distance and wear a face mask outside your car. Please don't bring any food items from your distribution or for distribution from home. Packaged tabarruk and drinks will be provided at the center following health guidelines. Do not litter the parking lot. Use the trash bins placed at the entrance. Indoor facility will be limited to bathroom use only on an individual basis. Lastly, please follow all volunteers' instructions. Please recite our Surah Fatiha for all Shuhada of Islam, the Marhumin named on our memorial plaque, and for all Marhumin. Now I would like to invite Hujjat Salam Sheikh Hamza Sadagar to come in and deliver his speech. Sallu ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين بارئ الخلائق أجمعين بعث الأنبياء والمرسلين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا وحبيب قلوبنا وطبيب نفوسنا وشفيع ذنوبنا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المكرمين المنتجبين لا سيما بقية الله في الأراضين روحي وأرواح العالمين لتراب مقدمه الفداء ولعنة الله على أعدائهم أجمعين إلى قيام يوم الدين. For the hastening and the return of our Imam, let's recite the salawat. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجه. إن شاء الله in these nights, the three nights that we have ahead of us, we are commemorating the Shahada of Imam Zain al-Abidin Salamullah Alayh. And inshallah we will discuss a few aspects of the life of Imam Zain al-Abidin that will help us in our lives in following that ma'soom inshallah. Imam Zain al-Abidin, after Karbala and the events that took place in Karbala, as the hadith says, because of the shahada of Imam al-Husayn, the lack of support of the followers of the Ahlul Bayt, an imam was slaughtered publicly. This is a very difficult thing that occurred. We are not able to relate to that condition. Let me remind us a little bit. A few years back, we had a scholar, a mu'ammam, a student of the Hawza. He wasn't even a marja, he was a good scholar, good. But he wasn't even at the rank of marja'iyya. In Saudi Arabia, they accused him of misconduct and they sentenced him to death and they took his life. What was the state of affair? What was the state of mind? What was the outcry that you were hearing? We weren't in or under the authority of that regime. We live outside of that. For the, as they're referred to, Saudis, unfortunately, I don't know why we have to call our brothers and sisters from that part of the world with this mal'oon name, but that's the unfortunate reality that we live in. That's what it's called, that region. So brothers and sisters who lived there, especially followers of the Ahlul Bayt, the conditions at that point for them are very different than whatever they felt before that point. In Iraq, right after the revolution succeeded, Saddam imprisoned, he had Shahid Sayyid Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr under house arrest, and then he was taken into the dungeons of Saddam. In secret, he was assassinated, he was martyred, he was tortured to death with his sister, both of them. The Hawza in Najaf, before and after, was not the same. The conditions that the ulama feel when this regime is willing to do something on that scale, conditions become very difficult. In Iran, before that, before there was a revolution, before there was even the Reza Khan dynasty or the Pahlavi dynasty, before Reza Khan himself established the last dynasty that was removed by the Mu'mineen, led by Imam Khomeini, and the Islamic system was established. The ulama during Qajar's time enjoyed a lot of influence and respect. There was a lot of respect. In fact, judiciary was
given and considered the job of and the authority of the scholars, mujtahideen, ulama, in the various cities. If people had an issue with the government, the only place that they found to be able to go to and complain and get something done, it wasn't like they really listened too greatly, but at least people felt there is a certain level of weight, and people would go to that marja. The marja would actually get involved, say things. And if they didn't listen, but they were very careful about ulama in general, scholars in general. There came a time, however, that in Tehran, a marja, Sheikh Fadlullah Nuri was a marja. A marja was hung publicly. For a number of years after that, all the people, the whole movement, anyone that was part of the Mashruta movement, anyone who listened to Sheikh Fazlullah, and even the extensions of that in Iraq, the ulama, it's very difficult. The grandson of the Prophet, who was clearly in opposition to the ruler, has been assassinated, has been slaughtered in broad daylight. All those who had, there were a lot of people that had issues with the Umayyads, especially in Iraq, but also elsewhere. Also in Medina. It wasn't like people were happy with the Umayyads ruling over them. Most people, it could be claimed, were not happy with the Umayyads ruling, but they didn't say anything. Sometimes they would complain. Imam al-Husayn, during Muawiyah's rule, criticized the government publicly. Imam al-Mujtaba criticized the government publicly. As whom? As the grandchildren of the Prophet, as the leaders of the people of Iraq, as they were seen, that's what they were called. In other words, people of influence, not somebody in the corner in the back room somewhere in their house mentioning that. Imam al-Husayn spoke out. Muawiyah, against what he signed in the treaty, he started killing the main companions of Amir al-Mu'mineen, like Hujr ibn Adi. Imam al-Mujtaba publicly condemned that, criticized that, spoke against it publicly. Others had issues, they would talk about things. It wouldn't get anywhere, but at least people talked. Some people talked. Some people spoke. The very fact that Hujr ibn Adi was assassinated by Muawiyah was because he used to speak publicly against the wrongs of Muawiyah, and he was summoned to Sham. He went trusting that nothing will happen. That's what he was told, and he went on the way back. They assassinated Hujr ibn Adi. But this shows that people did speak. There were people that were speaking. Those who had issues would talk about the issues with the government. They would talk about the problems. And of course, Imam al-Husayn and Imam al-Mujtaba had an underground movement developing the conditions in order to re-establish the government of Islam, the government of the Ahlul Bayt. That was the plan all along, and they were in touch with and in contact with the people in Kufa. That Sulaiman ibn Surad that we mentioned a number of times in the first Ashra, he was one of the figures that was in touch with Imam al-Mujtaba and was part of the planning for what was going to happen, which then they backed out of it, unfortunately. But they were part of the planning. They knew it was... Imam al-Mujtaba had that plan going,
And there were people that were willing to be in touch. Imam al-Mujtaba told them. They came to Imam al-Mujtaba. They publicly, in a session at the house of Imam al-Mujtaba, which is not private, it's not something that nobody, they shut the doors, nobody could attend. No, it's a pretty public session. They have come all the way from Kufa to Imam al-Mujtaba's house to talk to him about why he does not rise against Muawiyah. Why does he not go back to fighting Muawiyah? Didn't you sign a treaty? And that treaty with Muawiyah, Muawiyah stepped over it and said, I don't abide by any of these. Why are we not fighting him? So you see that people even talk about fighting the system. During Muawiyah's time, they even people, not Imam al-Mujtaba. Imam al-Mujtaba, obviously, he's the Imam. But the conditions are such in those times, because Imam al-Mujtaba was martyred 10 years before Karbala, which means that there was another 10 years of pretty much of Muawiyah before Karbala, before Yazid. During the time of Imam al-Mujtaba, it was still possible, the conditions were such that it was possible for people to talk about that. When Yazid came to power, Imam al-Husayn spoke about it. People listened. They didn't abandon. When the Imam spoke about this material in Mecca, it doesn't say anywhere that nobody wanted to listen. Everybody went away. Everybody turned their backs like, oh, please, we don't want to hear this. No, they heard. They just didn't do anything. They didn't have a problem with hearing that material. They just didn't come forward. In Kufa, they were talking actually about joining Imam al-Husayn. That shows even up to that time, the conditions were such that people, some at least, not a majority, but some were talking about the system, the establishment, to the degree that they're talking about supporting someone who is against the entirety of that establishment, Imam al-Husayn. They talk about sending letters to him. It is difficult. There are spies. In Basra, there were spies. In Kufa, there were spies. It's not that it's very easy to do this, but it's still at a level where these people, according to that account, 12,000 people pledge allegiance with Muslim ibn Aqil. That means the conditions allow for this. There are people that are willing to do that. But once the grandson of the Prophet is slaughtered in broad daylight for being against Yazid, for nothing else, he didn't raise a sword against Yazid. He said, this needs to be changed. He didn't say Yazid needs to be killed. He didn't raise no sword against even him, which he deserved that because of all the crimes that he had already committed. He didn't do anything. The only crime he had, and they mentioned this, so your crime is that you are not willing to obey Yazid ibn Muawiyah. The conditions become the conditions are very difficult now. Anyone that used to be able to speak about this now is going to be thinking twice. Imam Zain al-Abidin, though, what is his mission? The exact same mission that Imam al-Husayn had. The exact same mission that Imam al-Mujtaba had. He also has to set up and establish the government of Islam. He is also in opposition to the system. He showed that from the early days of his imamah, in the days that if there would have been any fear, and if there would have been any time to be silent and practice taqiyya in the sense of not talking about this, it should have been in the courtyard of Yazid in Sham. Imam Zain al-Abidin shows that. He refers to Yazid, Yabna al-Tulaqa. Imam Zain al-Abidin's mission is the same, but the conditions are very different. conditions are very different. Imam Zain al-Abidin begins his imamah in this context. His mission is the same mission as the previous imams. What are the measures that Imam Zain al-Abidin takes? What are some of the things that he does in that context? There are a number of things that he does. One of them is that he wrote letters. He wrote letters. And he had these letters distributed amongst people that had ears for them. They would be willing to read this. People who looked up to Imam Zain al-Abidin. There was a period that Imam Zain al-Abidin was pretty much, everybody was afraid of communicating with him after Karbala, those difficult conditions. But after a while, then the ice breaks. Imam Zain al-Abidin took measures and the ice broke. And then eventually some people started coming and he started going. There were those who were now willing to at least hear what the imam has. And then some are getting closer and closer. The numbers increase. We have hadith. It says after Karbala, there was only three. Everyone, irtadda an-nas, the hadith says. Irtadda an-nas. People went away from the path of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, which means went away from the imam. Their whatever superficial Islam remained. But in terms of following the imams, there's only three. Then gradually over time, the numbers started increasing. Imam Zain al-Abidin writes these letters and distributes them. Some of the signs tell us that the way the imam used to do it and get these letters out, these writings out, they're not letters to people. These are open letters. These are writings, basically. Maybe you want to call them articles, but it's not exactly articles. Articles are very informative. That's the objective of them, to inform a person of something. The objective of these was for them to be repeated. You don't repeat reading an article. You read it once, you get the data, information, whatever, it's over. You try to find another article. That's not the objective of this. Imam Zain al-Abidin encouraged for the ones who took it, he said, try to read this every Friday. And the Shia used to do that. One of them is found in the Rawdatul Kafi, the last part of Al-Kafi. And this is what it says. It says the believers used to gather on Fridays when they used to pray. They used to take this writing out. They had copies. They had made copies in the traditional way. And they would read off of that. The objective was to read them regularly, repeatedly. What is the message that the imam is trying to repeat? Which means that he's trying to establish a certain culture and keep people away from a certain culture. In one statement, we can say that the imam had the principles of tashayyu' in this letter. Principles of tashayyu'. He wants them to repeat these on a regular basis, every week, read it, take it out, be reminded of these principles so that this becomes part of their identity. It forms their identity. It changes their identity from what the other material available to them in society, what they're hearing from the pulpits, what they're hearing from the people, what they're hearing at the masjid, what they're hearing in these traditional forms of media that form public opinion. The opinions of people are formed in these ways. All these channels of information, what they would create in a person, the type of person that that would create would be one thing. Imam Zain al-Abidin, with these writings that he had them copy and read regularly, is trying to get them to form an identity other than the mainstream identity that is led by the tyrants. We have hadith, An-nas ala din mulukihim. This is a reality. The government of a time, a government of a land, they're the ones that form and shape the culture of a people. The culture formed here is the result of what the elite are leading it towards. The reason why the 40s and 50s are very different and 60s and 70s compared to now is that the elite, with whatever's available to them, whether it's Hollywood, the media outlets, the newspapers, traditionally in the old days, then everything that's online, television, all of these different means available to them, as well as their own conduct, their behavior with the people that are under them, that work with them, and then that echoing in society. This is what it does. This is how it is. The Umayyads were influencing the identity, the Islamic identity of the people. These are Muslim people. So when their identity is shaped in a certain way, then that is going to be their identity as Muslims. And they're going to think that this is their Islamic identity, something that we see today. Because we come together from different cultures, it's a little more visible to us. When we're living in one of the countries that has been Muslim for a long time and there's already a Muslim culture there, it's a little more difficult to see. But when different cultures gather here, we see, oh, Iranians do things this way, Pakistanis do it this way, this part of Pakistan perhaps one way, the other part of Pakistan a different way, this part of India one way, and so on and so forth. And then in the Arab world, this part of the Arab world practices this way or that. Their identity has shaped, and then we tend to think that those ways of doing things is our Islamic identity. So when we see things done differently, we object, thinking that they're moving away from the Islamic identity, not knowing that neither of those is actually an Islamic identity. That's a cultural identity. It's part of what we were raised with in any of those parts that we're from, or whatever part, if we are from those areas, we have been raised with that. It doesn't stem from Islam. It stems from the local context and the culture that we have. But we tend to understand it as an Islamic thing. We think this is Islamically right or wrong based on how we were raised. Did we read it anywhere? No. We didn't read it anywhere. Did we read it in the Quran? We didn't. Did we read it in Hadith? We didn't. Why do we think it's Islamic? Because we were raised with it as Muslims. We think that's an Islamic thing. That's good. Or if we think something is okay, we think it's okay Islamically. As Muslims, when a culture develops, that's what happens. So when their identity is being shaped by the Umayyads with whatever means they have available to them, people are going to turn into those types of Muslims. Imam Zain al-Abidin, he didn't have a public pulpit to be able to speak regularly to the masses. He was in Medina, in ways under surveillance, in ways restricted, in ways limited, although it wasn't too obvious, but he was restricted. He didn't have access, or who would provide a... Even Imam al-Sadiq's time, we hear that he had 2,000 students. These are inaccurate statements. There was no session where in Masjid al-Nabi, Imam al-Sadiq stood and then 2,000 people sat there. Now in Qum, your Bahth Kharij has 1,000 students. We're like, wow, that's a lot of people sitting there. 2,000 sitting there in a class? That's not what happened. They've added up the numbers of people that have been associated or have had association with Imam al-Sadiq and say there's 2,000 students that Imam al-Sadiq had. Never had a public pulpit, especially regularly, to speak to the people. What does he use? The means that are available to him. Write something, tell them, read this, repeat it. Not just one, a number of them. Read it and repeat it. And then the wording of the writing was in such a way that it was appealing. When you start reading, you don't want to put it down. In other words, the artistic touch, the eloquence, the wisdom, it's the truth. The truth is appealing. The courage that is found once you read it, you realize, you know, this is someone with guts that's writing this. And you also see the cleverness and the tactfulness of the writer. So all of these lead to the person who gets this to want to repeat it. Otherwise, the imam isn't there. Did you read it? No, he wrote something. When he gives it and he encourages, they read it once. They do want to. A few people hear about it. They want to read it. They read it. Then they start doing it. Abu Hamza al-Thumali, in that one letter that I'm speaking of, he says that the Shia, now this is not the early days where there was only three, after they had the numbers had started to increase, Abu Hamza al-Thumali says that the followers of the Ahlul Bayt would read this. Abu Hamza didn't even get it from the Imam. He came a little later. He says, I found a writing that was attributed to Imam Zain al-Abidin. And he says it's about zuhd, and this is being tactful. I'll explain that a little bit. He says it's about zuhd. And the Shia regularly recited this on Fridays. So that means it had become something. The Shia are reading this. It's not something that the Imam wrote and then nobody's looking at. No, it had developed. The Imam used this. Few compared to the mainstream, but it's like starting a fire. There's a little spark here. There's a little bit of coal that has caught on over there. A few of them together, they're catching on. That's what's happening. He's using this to form the identity of the Shia. The principles that distinguish tashayyuh from non-tashayyuh in that environment are very important. That's how you create identity. In a social setting where you're amongst a majority, the way you're going to be able to establish an independent identity, a different identity, if there's reasons for it, which there were plenty of reasons for it, the direction of Islam was moving further and further away from the Islam of the Prophet. So to separate from the mainstream identity and create a distinct identity, the way you do that is to focus on the differences, not the differences that will cause friction, fighting. That's not the objective of it. The objective, sometimes people talk about differences, what they want to do with it or what ends up happening is to cause fighting, conflict. These letters did not create conflict between the people who were forming this identity and the others in terms of arguments, fightings, taking out swords or anything like that. Ideological differences. In other words, the wrongs that they're moving towards, he stresses on, that is wrong, this is right. Out of all the Islamic teachings that we have, what are some of the elements in this ideological identity that the Imam is presenting to his followers and telling them to repeatedly go over, mention, think of, so that this becomes your identity. The Imam, in a few different ways, mentions this. And that's why Abu Hamza al-Thumali says these writings, or this writing that I found, and he says, by the way, I didn't finish that part, he says, I went to the Imam, I made a copy of it, I went to the Imam and I said, this is attributed to you. Are these your words? He said, yes, he confirmed. These are my words. Abu Hamza didn't get the title from the Imam. He read it, what came to him, the word that he uses in describing this writing is that it was the most eloquent, best writing, most moving writing compared to anything else that we have heard, except for what we've heard from Ali ibn Abi Talib about what? About zuhd. Zuhd. Which means to be disconnected from the dunya, not follow the desires, the lower desires of this material realm, not be a slave of the lower desires and temptation. That's what he calls it. The wording of the Imam, you read that, you think it's about zuhd, he's probably going to be talking about how bad the dunya is and so on and so forth. When you read it carefully, you realize that's not the language. This form of zuhd that we understand, that is apolitical, the type of zuhd that when is explained is always completed, or they always end the conversation about zuhd, that zuhd doesn't mean not to have nice things, not to have big homes, not to have number of cars, not to have good cars, not to have electronics, not to have good clothes, not to have good fragrances, not to... Zuhd doesn't mean any of that. They talk a whole session, 45 minutes about the zuhd of Ali ibn Abi Talib, so on and so forth. After 45 minutes, but zuhd doesn't mean you don't enjoy this. Everybody goes home and they do enjoy everything that they were enjoying anyway. Even that topic, it's nice to talk about. You talk about zuhd, you talk about Ali ibn Abi Talib, talk about his clothes being ripped up and sewn together, and how it was, the dunya was so insignificant and meaningless and worthless in the eyes of Ali ibn Abi Talib. It's so nice, but then when you say, it doesn't mean not to have any of this. It means go back and do whatever you were doing. When you look at this letter, you see that there's more to zuhd in general. There is a general idea of zuhd. The Prophet used to talk about zuhd when he was the ruler. We didn't have a taghut, just the Prophet that's ruling. He talked about zuhd. As a person who was guiding the people, he talked about zuhd. And of course, he talked about the glamour of the dunya. The Quran talks about zuhd, and it talks about the zina of the dunya. It talks about those who follow the zina of the dunya, they desire it, they prefer it over the akhirah, and condemns them. And then in another verse says, "Man harrama zinata Allah allati akhraja li'ibadihi." So this glamour, this beauty, this magnificence, who says this is haram for the believers? The Prophet did both. He said, don't be following the dunya. He said, don't make halal haram. These things are halal, enjoy them. But don't be the abd of the dunya. This is in the context of what? The context of the Prophet being the ruler, and he's training them. While he gives Fatima to Zahra Fadak, that huge property that none of us own. I don't know of any of us being that wealthy. That was a lot of wealth. A heck of a lot of wealth. Not just for back then, for today, if you do the math and convert the amount of that, the amount of land and the riches, was all developed, cultivated land. And the produce that It was yielding. You look at all of that compared to that. None of us have anything like that. While he gave all of that to Fatima to Zahra, and it wasn't only her. That's what she was given by the command of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Others were given other pieces of land and other riches. The Prophet gave this and said, look, don't be the abd of this. He's leading by example through his speeches, but he's the governor, he's the ruler, he's the authority. And we see that manifesting. We see that culture over the course of those 10 years, the way it developed, the correct way it was developing. Imam Zain al-Abidin is talking about zuhd in a different context. Imam Zain al-Abidin is talking about zuhd in a context where the rulers of the land, which as we said, the hadith says, "An-nas ala dini mulukihim," the elites in the land are indulging in the dunya. It's all about taking pleasure in whatever they can. And I mean whatever they can, whatever's available. And they create this race. If you're closer to the governor, if you're closer to the ruler, if you're closer to the governor of Medina, you're going to get more. And everybody's looking and seeing. What happens? This race forms. Race towards the dunya. People are moving towards that. Everybody wants that. They want comfort. Where there were thugs as rulers in certain areas in Kufa, because of their grudges, their hatred of, and their bad memories of Kufa, because Kufa supported Amir al-Mu'mineen, in Siffin, before and after, they didn't do everything that they were supposed to, but there's always problems for the Umayyads in Kufa. They put the likes of Hajjaj ibn Yusuf al-Thaqafi. I think this is where you can use the word retard. This individual that was filled with hatred, this is a thug. Okay, the ruler of Kufa is a person that has mental problems. When you have someone that has a mental problem as your ruler, then you see that if you want to be in peace, if you want to be safe, you got to make sure this guy is on his good side towards you. You don't want to rub him the wrong way. Because you don't know what he's going to do, when he's going to do it. Anything could happen with this guy. If you get him upset, he's willing to take life just because he was upset at you. He would have, this is what I mean by a retard, someone with a mental issue. He was short. He would take fabric that was double his size to a tailor and ask them, do you think this fabric is enough? The tailor was like, are you kidding me? This is double your size. What are you talking about? Like, lay him down, lash him, you fool, you idiot. You calling me short? A guy would learn. Oh, next time Taylor has Hajjaj ibn Yusuf al-Thaqafi coming to him, he says, triple his size. Is this enough? I'm not sure. Maybe I'd be able to somehow get it together. He's lying. He knows he's lying. I can't rub my... You can't tell him the truth. This guy is mental. You want to get close to them. You want to be in peace. What do? You get close to these people. You do things that they want. So you either keep away from their bad side or you get some of the benefits. You want the benefits. Imam Zain al-Abidin in this letter focuses on this. He says, look, everybody is moving towards the dunya and they're doing things the way the government tells them. They follow orders, they're in line. They do even more. The objective is the dunya. Mom keeps repeating, make sure that's not your objective. Listen to what God says. don't listen to what they say over what God says because of the dunya. This is zuhud. This is zuhud. This is one of the pillars of being a Shia. One of the pillars of being a Shia in the Muslim community is this. The Imams emphasized and insisted on this. You can't be not fulfilling what God has ordered. You can't be allowing sin to occur and you be part of it for the dunya. Whether it's to get some of the benefits that they have, the carrots, or it's because of the stick, that if you do the right thing, like, look, just keep me out of this. Why? I have a family, I have this, I have that. Being Shia, Imam Zain al-Abidin giving this identity, this is important. It doesn't matter what they want. It doesn't matter what they do if you don't do what they want. What matters is what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala wants. And if you have to sacrifice your comfort in this life, if you have to sacrifice your safety in this life, if you don't know when, for what godforsaken reason, they're going to put a label on you and throw you in prison for something that you didn't even do, just because the things you did do that were right that they didn't like. If you avoid that, not do that, if we think that, because practice is another thing. Let's just get this. The first step is Imam Zain al-Abidin got this straight in their heads. We got to get this straight in our heads. Unfortunately, it has become the opposite of this in our heads in terms of what tashayyu means. We think that tashayyu has something called taqiyyah. And taqiyyah means that if I'm afraid that the authorities are going to crack down, that I need to hush. Now this is part of tashayyu. Tashayyu is this. Taqiyyah. And then others have learned this. Like, yeah, they ask, are you Shia? He says, no. Like, okay. Do you guys do ashadu an aliyan waliullah? He says, no. Well, these guys believe in taqiyyah. They lie. Is your Qur'an and our Qur'an, do you have any hidden chapters? We say no. They're like, oh, they're lying. They have taqiyyah. Taqiyyah is not this. The Imams never lied and they never encouraged lying. Even in the cases where some people think that they lie, they never lied. They said a truth that the person didn't realize what the Imam is saying. Taqiyyah doesn't mean that. Taqiyyah doesn't mean the opposite of this zuhd. The zuhd that Imam Zain al-Abidin is talking about is not to prefer the comforts of the dunya, where they rest in the hands of the authorities and doing what the authorities want you to do. Not wanting that dunya. This is zuhd. The taqiyyah that we seem to understand seems to be contradicting this, because it basically means, okay, if they're going to shut us down, if they're going to imprison us, if they're going to take life, if they're going to give us a hard time, if they're going to take our belongings, if they're going to confiscate our belongings, then we shouldn't talk, we shouldn't do this, we shouldn't do that. These are contradicting. How could the Imam say that, say these words about zuhd and explain him in that way, and then have this form of taqiyyah, and then say at-taqiyyatu dini wa dinu abai. The Imams have said taqiyyah is my deen, my religion, and the religion of my forefathers. How could this be? Well, we didn't understand taqiyyah right. Taqiyyah, according to hadith, is tursul mu'min. At-taqiyyatu tursul mu'min. Turs is a shield. Someone who's fighting the unjust authorities,
They need a sword to fight, and then they need a shield to defend. Taqiyya is defense. Not putting away the sword because I'm going to get hit. You go to the battlefield, you go out with a sword, you go out with a shield. Do you still get strikes? Do you still get cut? Do you still lose limbs? Yeah, you do. But it doesn't mean you go to the battlefield without a shield. You go with a sword and you go with a shield. You have something that you're fighting with and you have something that you defend yourself. Taqiyya doesn't mean if the authorities don't like something, they're going to give you trouble, they're going to imprison you, they're going to lock you up, they're going to take this away, they're going to take that away, that you stop it and then call this taqiyya. No, that's like putting the sword, because those words that they don't like is our sword. The behavior that they don't like, because of which they imprisoned the imams, is their sword. You say, be silent, don't do that. It means put aside the sword, which means don't fight. The imam said, taqiyya is tursul mu'min. It's the shield. While you're fighting, there are certain times that you don't stop fighting, but while you're fighting, you put your shield up too. So if they're trying to strike you, they hit the shield. I've talked about an instance, an example of taqiyya. Jabir ibn Yazid al-Ju'fi, this great companion of Imam al-Baqir and Imam al-Sadiq, Hisham had given orders to kill him. The Imam had told him, apparently he had told him to behave a certain way. My understanding is that he wasn't told that he's going to be killed. He was told to behave in a certain way. What was the behavior? To act like he's lost it. Did he stop fighting? Did he stop representing the Imam as the leader of this movement against the authorities? No, he didn't. Taqiyya was during that period where his life was in danger. To protect his life, to be able to fight more, the Imam told him, act like you've lost it and make everyone believe it. Or act like you've lost it in front of everyone. And he did. That saved his life. That's taqiyya. The Imam is asked, is today the mal'oon, another mental person, Abu Ja'far al-Mansur, he's looking for an excuse. The Imam puts the shield up. He says, is today the last day of the month of Ramadan, or is it the first day of Shawwal? Is it Eid, or is it still Ramadan? Do we have to fast? Or the Imam says, whatever the Hakim says. Well, he likes that. The Hakim, he's the Hakim. The idiot, the fool doesn't understand. The Imam doesn't mean him. He's giving him the Islamic ruling. The Islamic ruling is the true authority of the land, which is the Imam. Whatever he says counts for everyone. So what he's saying, what he understood, what the Imam meant, two different things. But he words it very carefully so he gets what he wants. That's the shield. This is taqiyya. Imam Zain al-Abidin has given us these jewels, brothers and sisters, in shaping the identity of Shia. We have got to try doing that amongst the Shia. I read something the other day, an account in history that I had not come across. It's actually related to Imam Zain al-Abidin's time as well. And it's very scary, very frightening, very frightening. The account that says that irtaddad nas, people turned away from the Imam, true Islam, after Ashura, after Karbala. It says that one of the companions of the fourth Imam said this. And when he was saying this to some of the Shia in Medina, you know what he said to the Shia in Medina? This is a Shia, they're a Shia. But they are by name. This is a real Shia. He used the words
the phrases of Ibrahim against the kuffar of his tribe. Inna bura'a'u minkum wa bada baynana wa baynakum al-adawatu wal-baghdha' hatta tu'minu billahi wahdah. The words, we've gone over them in tafsir of Surah Mumtahana. Words of Ibrahim to the kuffar, he said, Inna bura'a'u minkum. We have nothing to do with you. Bada baynana wa baynakum al-adawatu wal-baghdha'. There's enmity and hatred between us. Not personally. As long as you're on that path, there's hatred and enmity. حَتَّى تُؤْمِنُوا بِاللَّهِ وَحْدًا. Until you believe in the one God. Those are the words of Ibrahim towards the kuffar. This Shia of Imam Zain al-Abidin is referring to the Shia, the so-called Shia of the Ahlul Bayt. Those who consider themselves the Shia of Amir al-Mu'mineen, the Shia of Imam al-Mujtaba. They consider themselves that. He says to them this line. Come to a time where the identity of someone who calls themselves a Shia, their very identity, there's a time where the identity hasn't changed. I have shortcomings. I don't do everything I know is right, but the identity and my understanding is straight. I don't approve of wrongdoing, but I'm involved with it on a small scale. I know I'm trying to get rid of this. These are two different things. The identity changes. For some of us, the identity has changed. We need what Imam Zain al-Abidin did at the time for us. We need the Shia to read these lines, repeat them weekly. Because the identity of some of us is, please the authorities, not the authorities of the fusaq or the munafiqeen. The authority of blatant kufr, the authority of Trump, the authority of the Queen of England, the authority of the German ruling class and authority. You need to please them, keep them happy. This goes against the identity of the Shia. If that is your identity, bada baynana wa baynakum al-adawatu wal-baghdha' hatta tu'minu billahi wahda. This is what we learn from Imam Zain al-Abidin and what he's trying to do. If your identity, you call yourself a Shia, and this is what you think tashayyu' is, this is what you call taqiyya, in the name of taqiyya, you're going against the identity of tashayyu' that Imam Zain al-Abidin said, bada baynana wa baynakum al-adawatu wal-baghdha. The relation between me and you is, no, I'm not with you. Whatever you call yourself, you should remove that name. That's not the identity of tashayyu'. If any speaker encourages this type of behavior, they are encouraging the identity of taghut, the identity of the Umayyads, the identity of the time that Imam Zain al-Abidin was going against. And we should say the same thing to them. Bada baynana wa baynakum al-adawatu wal-baghdha'. You're changing the identity of tashayyu'. How dare you call yourself something else? Tashayyu' is this. Tashayyu' is Imam Zain al-Abidin in the court of Yazid, standing against Yazid, where he's brought in chains at their disposal. They could do anything to him. They've already beheaded his father. The head of his Imam al-Husayn is sitting there. Imam Zain al-Abidin is in chains. This is tashayyu'. These are the leaders of tashayyu'. This is being Shia. This is the identity. Imam Zain al-Abidin trains. Said, look, this is what you need to do. Don't worry what they're going to do to you. Taking away your comforts or not giving you comforts, taking away your freedoms or whatever they want to do, that should not be a reason for you to behave one way or another. Should be looking at what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says. Look at what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says. Please Allah, and do not choose the dunya. This is the zuhd of Ali ibn Abi Talib and the zuhd of Imam Zain al-Abidin. Razaqanallahu wa iyyakum. We hope that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses all of us with this type of zuhd. Only these types of Shia are going to be the companions of the 12th Imam, the soldiers of the 12th Imam. If a person does not have this identity as tashayyu', even if they call themselves tashayyu', they cannot be soldiers of the 12th Imam. They just cannot. With what the 12th Imam is doing, inshallah, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala help us move in that direction and develop that identity. Sallallahu alayk. Ya Aba Muhammad. Ya Zain al-Abideen. صلى الله على يا مولاي يا أبا محمد روحي فداك يا مولاي صلى الله عليك يا مظلوم غريب Zain al-Abidin was gharib, as most of our imams were. People abandoned him. They left him. They didn't listen to him. In the city of the Prophet, he was alone. There's something about Medina. Take your hearts to Baqi. How many of you wish to be there these nights? I'm sure these nights, the grave of Imam Zainul Abideen is lonely. No one's there visiting. No one's there reciting nohas. No one's there reciting salams. No one's there reciting marsiyas. Ya Allah, can we see a day that the Shia gather in Baqi, build a beautiful shrine connected to the masjid of the Prophet? What a beautiful day that would be. But right now there's nothing but bare soil. Ya a'immati wa sadati ruhi fidakum. There's something about Medina. There's so much loneliness and ghurba. Amir al-Mu'mineen was gharib in Medina. Fatima al-Zahra. غريب. Imam al-Mujtaba was غريب. Imam Zain al-Abideen, Imam al-Baqir, Imam al-Sadiq, Ruhi fidakum. Imam Zain al-Abideen survived Karbala, but his soul was torn to pieces, knowing of what happened in Karbala, seeing what happened in Karbala, hearing Hal min Nasirin Yansurni, hearing Imam al-Husayn call out when he's all alone, Hal min Nasirin Yansurni.
Imagine Imam Zain al-Abidin hearing that. He tries to get up. He tries to grab a sword. But his body just cannot do that. Cannot respond. Ya Mazloom. When he watched his aunt Zainab protect the children, he saw her. She would put herself between the men and the children. They would be whipping her. Imam Zainul Abidin would be seeing that. I'm supposed to be protecting you all, but I can't. Ruhi fidak ya Mawlai. No wonder they say in Medina, plenty of times, different occasions, different scenarios, Imam Zainul Abidin constantly remembered Karbala. If he would see they're about to slaughter a lamb, he would say, wait, have you given the lamb water? They said, of course we did, we are Muslimun. He said, well, they slaughtered my father without giving him water. ألا لعنة الله على القوم الظالمين وسيعلم الذين ظلموا أي منقلب ينقلبون يا حسين.
Ya Hussein, 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 Ya Hussein. Dard sajjad ke girtas pe laun kaise दर्द सजाद के गेरे तास पे लाऊं कैसे दर्द सजाद के गेरे तास पे लाऊं कैसे दर्द सजाद के दर्द सजाद के गेरे तास पे लाऊं कैसे दर्द सजाद के किरतास पे लाऊं कैसे आए रोता है कलम लफ्ज बनाऊं कैसे आए रोता है कलम लफ्ज बनाऊं कैसे दर्द सजाद के किरतास पे लाऊं कैसे दर्द सजाद के किरतास पे लाऊं कैसे दर्द सजाद के बाबे जोला हूं मैं है तो के गिरा से बेगुलू बाबे जोला हूं मैं है तो के गिरा से बेगुलू ऊंटों से गिरते हुए बच्चे उठाऊं कैसे दर्द सजाद के किरतास पे लाऊं कैसे दर्द सजाद के किरतास पे लाऊं कैसे दर्द सजाद के कैसे दर्द सजाद के जिनकी मादर का जनाजा था उठा रात के बाद जिनकी मादर का जनाजा था उठा रात के बाद सर भर ना सरे بازار بلاؤں کیسے سربر ناصر، بازار بلاؤں کیسے درد سجاد کے، کرتاس پلاؤں کیسے درد سجاد کے، کرتاس پلاؤں کیسے درد سجاد پہ، رسیاں پاؤں میں چھالے تھے تماچوں کے نشان، رسیاں پاؤں میں چھالے تھے تماچوں کے نشان، حسرت و آس کی مہیت تو اٹھاؤں کیسے درد سجاد کے، کرتاس پلاؤں کیسے درد سجاد کے، کرتاس پلاؤں کیسے درد سجاد کے، کرتاس پلاؤں کیسے درد سجاد کے، زخم جو جسم پہ آئے ہیں دکھا سکتا ہوں، زخم جو جسم پہ آئے ہیں دکھا سکتا ہوں، دل نے جو شام میں کھائے ہیں دکھاؤں کیسے، ہائے دل نے جو شام میں کھائے ہیں دکھاؤں کیسے درد سجاد کے، کرتاس پلاؤں کیسے درد سجاد کے، کرتاس پلاؤں کیسے درد سجاد کے، ہو سلام اس پر کے جو قیدی بھی ہے بیمار بھی، ہو سلام اس پر کے جو قیدی بھی ہے بیمار بھی، ہو سلام اس پر کے جو قیدی بھی ہے بیمار بھی، پاؤں میں ہیں آبلے اور آبلوں میں خار بھی، ہو سلام اس پر کے جو قیدی بھی ہے بیمار بھی، ہو سلام اس پر کے جو قیدی بھی ہے بیمار بھی، آنکھ میں آنسو ہے زخم جگر میں، ہونٹوں پہ رضا کا نوحہ، کربلا سے ہے شام تلک وہ کانٹوں پہ سفر کرتا تھا بیردا، سیدانیاں اس پر ستم بازار بھی، او سلام اس پر کے جو قیدی بھی ہے بیمار بھی، او سلام اس پر کے جو قیدی بھی ہے بیمار بھی، او سلام اس پر کے جو بھی، ہو سلام اس پر کے جو قیدی بھی ہے بیمار بھی، دیکھنے والی آنکھوں نے دیکھا اس راہ میں یہ بھی منظر، ایک مسافر پابند سفر ہے خود اپنی لاش اٹھا کر، یہ ماں میں وقت ہے اور قافلہ سالار بھی، او سلام اس پر کے جو قیدی بھی ہے بیمار بھی، او سلام اس پر کے جو قیدی بھی ہے بیمار بھی، او سلام اس پر کے جو قیدی بھی ہے بیمار بھی، دیکھ کہیں پر جب کٹ کے مسافر چالیس شبوں کا جاگا، نیند جو آئے بے کس قیدی کو دروں سے سے جگایا جاتا دیکھ کر رویا خلق اور زینب لاچار بھی او سلام اس پر کے جو قیدی بھی ہے بیمار بھی او سلام اس پر کے جو قیدی بھی ہے بیمار بھی او سلام اس پر کے جو قیدی بھی ہے بیمار بھی او سلام اس پر کے جو بیمار بھی دیکھ کے زینب سجاد کی حالت فریاد یہی کرتی تھی میرا یقین ہے ایمان ہے میرا اے شام کے بے کس قیدی روئیں گے تجھ پر صدا مسند بھی اور دستار بھی ہو سلام اس پر کے جو قیدی بھی ہے بیمار بھی ہو سلام اس پر کے جو قیدی بھی ہے بیمار بھی ہو سلام اس پر کے جو قیدی بھی ہے بیمار بھی خون رگوں کا یا غیرت ہاشم کہتی ہے جھکا لے سر کو تو کو سلاسل کیا قید کریں گے ہے صبر کے اس پہ کر کو سر اٹھا یہ کس طرح ہے راہ میں بازار بھی او سلام اس پر کے جو قیدی بھی ہے بیمار بھی او سلام اس پر کے جو قیدی بھی ہے بیمار بھی او سلام اس پر کے جو قیدی بھی ہے بیمار بھی وہ عابد بیمار تھا وہ عابد بیمار تھا وہ عابد بیمار تھا چلنے سے جو لاچار تھا چلنے سے جو لاچار تھا اور شام کا بازار تھا اور شام کا حسین اور مصطفیٰ کی بیٹیاں مولا حق امام حسن یا حسین مولا حق امام حسن یا حسین یا حسین یا حسین یا حسین شبیر کی وہ لاڈلی شبیر کی اے شبیر کی وہ لاڈلی شبیر کی وہ ہائے سینے پہ جو شاہ کے پلی سینے پہ جو شاہ کے پلی جس کی ابا رن میں جلی جس کی ابا رن میں جلی منہ پر تماچوں کے نشان مولا حق امام یا حسن یا حسین مولا حق امام حسن یا حسین یا حسین یا حسین یا حسین یا حسین یا حسین
صلى الله عليك يا رسول الله صلى الله عليك يا خير خلق الله ويا خاتم النبيين وصفوة المرسلين صلى الله عليك يا أمير المؤمنين علي بن أبي طالب وصي رسول الله صلى الله عليك يا فاطمة سيدة نساء العالمين صلى الله عليك يا أبا يا أبا محمد يا حسن ابن علي أيها المجتبى صلى الله عليك يا أبا عبد الله وعلى الأرواح التي حلت بفنائك عليك مني سلام الله أبدا ما بقيت وبقي الليل والنهار ولا جعله الله آخر العهد مني لزيارتكم السلام على الحسين وعلى علي بن الحسين وعلى أولاد الحسين وعلى أصحاب الحسين جميعا رحمة الله وبركاته صلى الله عليك يا غريب الغرباء ويا معين الضعفاء والفقراء السلطان أبا الحسن يا علي بن موسى أيها الرضا المرتضى صلى الله عليك وعلى آبائك وأبنائك جميعا ورحمة الله وبركاته صلى الله عليك يا مولاي يا بقية الله يا حجة الله عجل الله تعالى فرجك وسهل الله تعالى مخرجك وظهورك وجعلنا من خير أعوانك وأنصارك والمستشهدين بين يديك صلى الله عليكم يا أهل بيت النبوة جميعا ورحمة الله وبركاته.